Hello, all, and welcome to another episode of Your One Black Friend. I'm your hostess, Jolie, and today's episode is going to be one of those really cool ones. I can usually tell when it's going to be that fun episode, and time again, the episodes that tend to do really well, I get a lot of feedback on, are the ones that I know going in are going to be fun. So I hope I'm not setting the bar up too high, but I was actually really looking forward to recording this. I don't normally record this late. It's actually 7:15 p.m. right now on a Sunday, but I have been playing with this in my mind for the last 2-3 days, and I was like, I gotta get it on tape. I gotta talk about it. So I'm gonna jump right into it. 2-3 days ago, I opened up Instagram to post to my stories, and I saw a post from one of my friends at Sublime Liberation, and it was her sort of doing a yoga dance thing, very stylized, very cool. And she had a cover of Gnarls Barkley's Crazy playing in the background, but this cover had been slowed down, which sort of forced you to pay more attention to it. And then the caption on the video read, "Have you lost your mind?" Now, it was one of those synchronistic hive mind kind of thing, because for the past like month or so, I've been talking about what's the point of thinking, letting go of thinking, letting go of the mind, using the mind as a tool, not having it just sort of run in the background. I think I may or may not have discussed this on a podcast, and if I have, it may not have aired yet, but if I'm repeating, then the repetition is more to just drive the message in. But what I was saying was, what I think I had said in a previous episode, was that you want to use your mind as a tool. You want to use your mind as an app almost, right? In the sense of, you wake up in the morning and you have a certain amount of energy to start the day. But think of your mind as an app that's just sort of running in the background that you never shut off. And over time, it's sort of draining your battery so that by the end of the day, you're sort of done. And it's because you've had this thing where once you're done with it, you don't exit out of it, and it's just running and draining you of energy. And so what I suggested was stop, like stop allowing your mind to just run. Pick up your mind and use it the way you go into an app or the way you go into ChatGPT. You've got a query, you've got a question, you go in, you type in the question. Once you're done, you exit out of the app and go about your day. ChatGPT is a very powerful large language model. But imagine if every time you had a thought, this thing was connected via, let's say, Neuralink, which is coming. Every question that you had, this thing just popped up an answer and popped up an answer and popped up an answer. It would be a certain level of madness, wouldn't it? And yet, that is what we do to our minds every day. Or I should say, that is what we allow our minds to do to us every day. So I'd gotten into this exercise of asking myself, what's the point of thinking? And saying to myself, I will only use my mind the way I use an app. I go in, I ask it a question. I need it to solve a problem. I don't need it to generate problems for me. I don't need to generate possible scenarios for me. If I've got a question I need to ask it, I will pick it up and use it to solve a problem. And then for the rest of the day, I will pull myself into whatever moment I'm in and live in moment tight compartments so that by the end of the day, I'm not exhausted. I'm not drained because of having this thing going in the background, just any sort of suggestion popping in and just draining me, right? I'm not going to do this thing where I'm just sitting and zoning. If you catch me sitting and zoning, it's because I'm thinking about what am I going to do with a piece, like a painting that I'm working on, or a t-shirt design that I'm working on, some treaties. We've redone Dress for Dystopia and changed the name to Treaties. So that's TREATTEES. And there's going to be some fun designs coming as well. So I want to be able to use my mind and not have it use me. And I'd ask the question, and you can go back a few episodes and you see the question has come up when I've said, what's the point of thinking, right? Because what we call thinking isn't really thinking. It's us listening to this voice in our head talk shit, generate impossible scenarios, generate situations, generate scenarios in your head and your mind that drain you. And we have no control over it. We're not actively trying to control it because we don't live in a society that tells us, hey, that's not you actually thinking. We don't know what this voice is. We don't know what this internal monologue is, this thing, this parasite that drains you. It's not you, right? So what I want you to do is recognize that it's not you. And there's something else that has harnessed the ability of your mind and is using it to just constantly generate responses uncontrolled. And what happens if you take control of that and you only use it when you want to? And so I started sitting in the space of whenever I catch my mind drifting, pull myself back to the moment and just become intensely focused on what I'm doing now. And sitting in the space of now. And what ends up happening, or what ended up happening, is all of a sudden it was silent. And the silent grew. The silence grew. The silence expanded and peace expanded. Where before it was just this constant chatter and noise. I'm not saying I've completely eradicated the internal monologue, but when I catch myself realizing that this thing is just firing, I pull attention away from it towards what I'm doing now. I only use my mind to solve the problems I want it to solve or to create things I want it to create. I am now starting to control it. And when I'm done, I exit out of the mind app, so to speak. And what I found is a lot of space. A lot of space when there's no noise. It's the space that kind of just grows and is growing within. And so when I saw Sublime doing this dance and I saw the question she had asked, have you lost your mind lately? I loved the twist of it. And I commented, I said, you know what? This is perfect. Beyond what she even realized, it was exactly what I needed to see was encouragement, because what ended up happening was in that space of not allowing this thing to generate problems, I sort of stopped worrying about what people think. Because if you're not worrying about what you really think, and I'm putting thinking quotes because it's not really thinking, then you also don't allow your mind the space to start trying to project yourself into other people's minds and to think about what they're thinking, right? Because once again, once you catch yourself, the exercise is, once you catch yourself going off on some tangent, you stop, you drop it, and you focus on whatever it is you're doing. Or you redirect the energy and say, you know, I will only use this creatively to solve whatever problems I'm trying to solve, to do whatever creative work I'm trying to do. So in a sense, you turn your entire day into a meditation, right? What is meditation? It's an exercise in attention, in focus, right? So you pick a mantra, and if your mind shifts away from the mantra, you pull it back. Now, what if you can take that and you expand the concept of meditation, but throughout the day? And instead of a mantra, it's whatever it is you're focusing on at that moment, whatever it is you're doing. If you're eating, be there now. If you're watching a show, be there now. If you're reading a book, be there now. And if you can't seem to pull yourself away from, you know, what your mind is saying and towards the present moment, then stop, take a deep breath in, and that will pull you back into the present. And what I'd said in past episodes as well was this. It doesn't matter what your mind is saying about what happened in the past, because the past is done. It doesn't matter what your mind is saying is about what will happen in the future, because the future is done. If we are living in a fully deterministic universe, or at least a mostly deterministic universe, and I've talked about free will not being free, it's something that requires exerted effort to strengthen. But for the most part, it's limited. So if our universe is largely deterministic, then you worrying about what will happen or what that person did or whose fault it is or who's to blame, all of that gets thrown away because it doesn't matter. So you're wasting your mental energy on things that don't fucking matter. So why would I do that? Why would I drain myself? Why would I drain my battery? Why would I waste the mental energy on things that don't ultimately matter? All I can do is pull all that energy from outside that's sort of dispersed and fractured throughout all of these probable realities that I largely don't have control over, because everything that you're experiencing now is a result of caused events that you had no control over. And so these are just effects of previous caused events that you have no control over. So all you can do on a day-to-day basis is deal with the effects of past causes that you did not control. And if you can sit with that, then you can sit with the realization and accept the realization that nothing is in your control anyway. You can only control what you can. And it doesn't make any sense for you to project yourself into all of these different sort of probable realities. When the problem comes, you will be able to deal with it then. And if you can't deal with it then, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because your reaction, your response to whatever it is that you're worried about is already kind of programmed in anyway. You have to imagine yourself as a character in a pre-scripted sort of drama, and you wake up and understand that the script's written and all you can do is play your part. That has been the recurrent theme. Now you pull all that in and you make that practical, and the way you make it practical is conserve your energy. Focus on what you can do now. What is right in front of you? Breathe. Not what happened. What are you doing? Who cares what happened? It's done. Not what will happen. What are you doing now? I'm not saying not to plan, but even that planning and how you choose to plan is based on circumstances beyond your control. You couldn't control being born a woman. You couldn't control being born a man. You couldn't control being born in North America or in UK or in the family that you're born into or the genetics that you have or the epigenetics that your ancestors were exposed to that is now triggering the way you respond and react to certain situations. That's all predetermined before you entered into this matter, material form. So stop wasting the energy. It's nobody's fault. It's not that person isn't an idiot. That's just how they were written. You see how once you start shaking that off, then all of a sudden it's space. All of a sudden it's, okay, all the tabs are closed because I don't really need that running. I don't need that running. It's just, it is what it is. And you can breathe. Just breathe. To the point where even breathing becomes sort of this joyous, peaceful, enjoyable experience more than like, well, probably just as much as like a lot of the things that you presently enjoy. You start to find joy in even something as simple as taking a very deep breath, because in that space, so you feel the sort of the cavern of your chest, you're just now, it doesn't matter. But when I was having these thoughts, I remember I had like a stain on my shirt. It was from paint. Because I'm a painter. And I remember looking at the paint and I heard my internal monologue say, throw the sweater away because the sweater is ruined. And I was like, the sweater is not ruined. There's just a stain. The purpose of a sweater is to keep me warm. It doesn't stop performing that function just because there's a stain on it. The reason why my mind is telling me to throw the sweater away is because it's wanting me to be afraid of somebody else's judgment of me. But I cannot control their judgment of me. If you judge me because I have a stain on my sweater, that's none of my business. You do you. But do you understand that when you engage in the act of judgment, that you're strengthening the internal monologue by feeding your attention to it and doing what it's telling you to do, which is to judge me. And sooner or later, that thing, that internal monologue, whatever we call it, whatever you want to call it, Wetiko, the mind parasite, is going to turn on you. And it's going to make you feel like shit for something that's quote unquote an imperfection. So just keep that in mind. But when I realized like I didn't really care whether or not there was a stain on my shirt for a second, I went, wow, is this madness? Is this insanity? Is this the line? Is this where people, because you get to a point where is this where I'm just going to end up just not caring? And all I could say in response to that is I think madness is caring about what other people think. You guys have heard me say this before. Madness is projecting yourself into somebody else's mind. Madness is throwing away a perfectly good sweater because of a stain and because you're afraid of what a person thinks or what people will think. But the line is wild because on one end, as you guys have heard me discuss, we're collectively mad. We have voices in our heads. We have things in our head that are tormenting us. I keep talking to people about the internal monologue. Every person I meet, I ask them about the internal monologue and they have it. Some might deny it, but ultimately when you ask the right questions, they can finally disidentify from it. But you see it tormenting people. You hear about, you know, suicide rates and how that's going up. Something's happening. It's an epidemic. It's a silent epidemic. And if it's not that, it's anxiety. And if it's not that, it's depression. It's overthinking. These are all symptoms. They're all facets. It's overdrinking. It's overeating. What is driving people to behave in these sort of ways? And it's because there's an internal monologue. There's a disembodied voice in our heads that's tormenting us. Disconnect from that, because that is true madness. So to bring it back to seeing my friend do this dance, and she was wearing all white and it was beautiful, and she sort of swayed to the music. And the song said, "I remember when I lost my mind." And I'd never had something resonate with me so quickly as it did in that moment, because all of a sudden that song took a different meaning. I've heard that song thousands of times. I never thought about it. It never meant anything to me until I saw that video. And all of a sudden it clicked, and it had to have happened in that moment because I was in that space of essentially losing my mind. It's a weird space to be in, because on one end it's disidentifying from mind, from the monkey mind. It's disconnecting from that ego, that internal monologue, and saying, no, that's losing your mind. Not in the way the society wants you to think losing your mind is. This is something else. And then the words spoke to me. There was something so special about that place. And it's just a space that I'm talking to you guys from. I'm going to read the lyrics to you. I edited it a bit. I took out the repeating parts, so it flowed just more of a statement. So here it goes. "I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so special about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space." That line right there, sit with it. Your emotions. So another shift. I just finished reading this book, Breathe. It's about one of the founders of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in the United States. And basically what he talked about in his autobiography, he was saying that you don't fight when you're emotional, because all of a sudden, like, you're not in control. You're reactive. And that once again spoke to that line. Even your emotions have an echo, because it gives you the space. In that space, you can see the emotions for what they are. And then you can use them as a reminder that your mind is in control, not you. So you see the echo, you hear the echo, and you can start, or you'll start using the emotions, not as something that drives you, not as something that causes you to react. When there is space, when you pause, when you lose your mind, when you disconnect from the mind, all of a sudden you feel the thing, but then there's that space, the separation from it. You see the emotions for what they are, when you would normally be driven by the emotions, where there's no space for the echo, right? Echoes only happen in sort of empty spaces. And so in that empty space, something that would have normally caused you to react unconsciously, caused you to, I'm talking about a lot of negative emotional states, you can hear it and go, okay, so I'm gonna take a step back. I can feel it and go, that feeling of anger, I feel it, I'm not in control. That's fine. It's okay to feel it. But instead of using it as a trigger to then react, you can use it as a trigger to remind you, hey, let go of the mind. I don't need it. I'm okay. Because in an emotion, a lot of the time what's causing that negative reaction is something that the mind is saying. And normally we don't allow ourselves enough time to go, wait, what are you telling me this person's behavior actually means? You don't give yourself enough time to go, wait, but that may not be what they actually mean. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without a care, yeah, I was out of touch, but it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. So for those of you who follow my stories, I posted the etymology of the word care. And it's like terrifying. Like when somebody says take care, it actually means like be full of fear, be anxious, be upset, be fearful. It's almost a curse. You guys have to be very mindful, not careful, mindful, as in you focus on what's coming out of your mouth and the words that we use. So once again, the line is, and when you're out there in this space where you have let the mind down, you've exited from the mind and it's just you in that space, you don't really care. Right? It's like the stain on my sweater. It's like, I don't care. I don't have a care. I'm not anxious about something because, well, I'm not listening to this thing tell me that something is relevant or is not relevant or what this means is that it's just, I don't, it's just space. And then he goes, it wasn't because I didn't know enough, right? It's not that I don't know to be concerned about society, about what people think. It's, I just knew too much in the sense of, it doesn't matter. To know that it doesn't matter. None of this matters. None of this matters. It's nobody's fault. We are not in control here. And it doesn't matter. What they think about you doesn't matter. To really know that, to know that we are living in a space, our lives are, for the most part, most people's lives are just reactions to things, to caused events that they have no control over. To really know that, to really know you're not really in control of much. And just get up and face the day and live and watch and play your role, play your tune, play your, you know, sing your song, perform, be Jolie, be cosmic, be sublime, be, that's all you really can do. As Socrates said, I know nothing. But to say that I know nothing is to say everything. It's truly the hallmark of wisdom. Don't really know anything. It's not ignorance. It's not a blissful ignorance, right? The bliss doesn't come from knowing nothing. It doesn't come from being ignorant in the traditional sense, as in knowing nothing equating to ignorance. It's really knowing that you know nothing and everything just is. And that's where the peace is. And in that space, you do ask yourself, am I crazy? Does this make me crazy to say the things that I'm saying? Because trust me, I wonder this all the time when I put out an episode. I'm just, you guys have even heard me say it on an episode. Like, to those who don't know what I'm talking about, it sounds like madness. But these are not uncommon conversations. I can back up the things that I'm saying. I can point out the books. I can say, read this, read that, read this. Right? I've talked about 40 Black Universe. I've talked about Vedic scriptures. All is, you know, I've talked about the Kabbalion. The all is mind. The universe is mental. I've talked about determinism. I've talked about Stoicism. These are conventional thoughts. I'm not making this stuff up. But it seems like madness. And you, because you live in a society where you're not really supposed to think beyond what you're programmed to think, you do start to question your own sanity. Does this make me crazy? One thing I'm learning is crazy people don't really ask that question, do they? And as the song says, possibly. Here's the second part. It goes, and I hope that you're having the time of your life, but think twice. That's my only advice. And so it ties back to what I was saying. Like, before you go to react to what your internal monologue is telling you, have a second thought, stop, pause, question it. This is obviously, like I'm saying, this is my interpretation. This is what I got from the song. Because when I saw her dance, I went and I found the lyrics to the song and I really listened to it. And I was like, this is perfect because this is exactly what I've been saying for the last like a couple of months or so. Think twice. Not even a couple of months. Like, it's in the book. It's in So You're Living in a Simulation. Pause. Everything. It's in the book. Think twice. Don't just, you've got the first mind, right? The thinking fast. It says, this is a problem. And then you, as the watcher, as a conscious observer, has to be the second person to come in and say, no, maybe not. Challenge the internal monologue. So he says, come on now, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? So you ask the average person, who are you? And they say, I am Joe. I'm Bob. I'm Steve. No, you're not. That's just the mind, right? Aspects of the mind presenting in egoic form. That's matter. That is a material form in which you, the conscious observer, happen to be bound in. We are one collective consciousness experiencing itself in a myriad of forms. I am not Joe. I am not Steve. I am. I am is the verb for being. I being Joe. human being. I am embodied in the material form, the ego, the characteristic, the persona of Joe. And he says, ha ha ha, bless your soul. You really think you're in control? Well, I think you're crazy. Just like me. I love that. Because it starts off like, I think you're crazy. And then it goes, just like me. You really think you're in control. And a largely deterministic reality. Universe, how are you in control of everything? And yet most people think they're in control. You tell people free will isn't free. You tell people, most people, if you tell them free will is an illusion, they say, no, I can do this. And it's like, that's bodily autonomy. Also, you're doing that. I didn't mean to do it. You're reacting the exact same way that most people, when you tell them that free will is an illusion, they do the exact same thing. So you can't even, not even, your responses aren't even like deviating from most people's responses to that same thing. That's bodily autonomy. And even your autonomy, which you think of as bodily autonomy, is limited. Control your heart. When you're tired, stay up. Right? Like your bloodstream, redirect it how you want it to be. If you're ill, feel better immediately. Like you're not in control. There's very little you control. And that in itself is to look at a world and we have the data. I'm telling you, the data is, I'm not the only one saying this stuff. To have access to all this data and say, hey, there's really not much that we can control. I forget what the guy, I think it was Laplace's demon. He said, if you take a demon and you give it, you present to it all of the information that was present at the beginning of the universe, it can predict what will happen throughout time. Now, there was a post a long time ago where I compared, and it was also a podcast episode, but we shall revisit. I compared Laplace's demon to AI. I said, well, what if Laplace's demon was AI? So you take a large language model and you plug in, you train it on all of the circumstances, all of the data that was present in the beginning of the universe, and say, extrapolate what will happen next. It should. Maybe not the AI we have now, but certainly once we get to the level of AGI and then ASI, in artificial superintelligence, I break down the meaning of these words in So You're Living in a Simulation. It's available on Amazon. So you feed it with the information that was present at the beginning. It should be able to extrapolate because it's cause and effect, the future and the present. I mean, it's being used now to do just that. Maybe not on a grand scale as I've described in terms of the entire universe, because we don't have that information. We can only sort of guess, but if you have the precise information. But there's also going to come a time when it will be able to, based on the information you feed it based on now, have it reverse engineer to go back and explain or to provide information that was present in the beginning. We're getting there. Interesting times. Interesting times. I love that. He says, I think you're crazy, just like me. But it's a twist. It's like me in the sense of, you would say that I'm crazy because I've lost my mind, because I've disconnected from the ego, because I said, I am not Joe. I am not this persona. I am the I. I am the watcher. I'm the observer. It sounds crazy. But then you, who think you are that, you think you're nothing but a material being. You're this persona, this thing that's destined to live and die in a blink of an eye. You think that that is truly you. Well, that's crazy. You're crazy. Just like me, like I've said, we're all mad here. So who's crazy? He said, my heroes had the heart to lose their lives out on the limb. My heroes had the heart to lose their lives out on the limb. And all I remember is thinking, I want to be like them. So if you think about some of the greatest people to ever live, there are people who challenged convention. It said, you know what, like, I am willing to give up, to some extent, some people even their lives, for what they believed in, to go out on a limb for what they believed in. That's, you know, one extreme. Other extremes are artists. Like, no matter what's going on, I'm going to just do what I want to do. Fuck the constraints of society. I'm going to get out of my head, get out of other people's heads, and live my life as authentically to be the best I that I can be. Not this persona that has been constructed of what society tells me I'm supposed to be and all these rules that have been shoved down my throat. I'm going to go out on a limb and live to my most authentic self. Not this being, but I. Those are the people that growing up we look up to and we admire. And we go, I want to be like them. But then as we grow older, we forget that. Because when you see people, ordinary people who are challenging conventions, we chastise them. We try to crab in the bucket and pull them down. But remember your heroes, right? What's that saying? Well-behaved women do not make history. You can expand that to any person, any persona, any human that you aspire towards or that you admire, that these aren't people who are in the box. They're living their lives out on the limb. Ever since I was little, it looked like fun. Ever since I was little, it looked like fun. Because I think those are the people who are truly having fun. There's fun and freedom. And it's no coincidence I've come. It's no coincidence that those people who challenge us, who inspire us to be, well, that's their function. It's not a coincidence. This is my function, to sit and talk to you. It was Sublime Liberation's function to post that video that was and to inspire. That's her function. It's no coincidence. There are no coincidences. And last line, and I can die when I'm done. I don't even have to explain that to you. Just let it sit with you. And I can die when I'm done. I can die. And I can die when I'm done. I'll die when I'm done. Amor fati, you know, to love one's fate, to accept one's fate, to this is it. I am here to perform my function. It's not a coincidence that I'm here. It's not a coincidence that the I, the consciousness that is expressing itself as Jolie, as you, it's not a coincidence. You're here for a reason. And when you're done, then you're done. But death is not the thing to be afraid of. It just means that you're done. You've served your function. And then you can die when you're done. That's it. You've served the play. The song is over. And once the song is over, once the performance is done, then that's when death comes. And then the last sort of bit, but maybe I'm crazy. Maybe you're crazy. Maybe we're crazy. Probably. And that's how it ends. Brilliant. Fucking brilliant. Fucking brilliant. Now, I put the poem into ChatGPT because I wanted it to really expand on the ideas in a way that, I mean, I'm good with sort of my free form sort of understanding, intuitive understanding of what the song means to me. But, you know, ChatGPT has a way, AI has a way of really making the information even more concise. And so I figured it's a good balance to have my interpretation of it, but also I wanted to see what it came up with as well, what it got from it as well. And oddly enough, it was kind of the same. So here's what it said. I asked it, what does this poem mean to you? And I copied and pasted the lyrics to the song Crazy, but with my edits, like I took out the repeating words or whatever. And it said, this poem speaks to the paradoxical nature of sanity and the societal norms that define it. The opening lines, I remember when I lost my mind, there was something so pleasant about that place, suggests a liberation in madness, a release from the constraints of conventional thinking. Now see, that part, I don't tie madness with a release from the constraints of conventional thinking. Like, I know why it says that, and I know that sometimes people define it as that, and I know that on some level, that is essentially how we classify madness, is that if you are unconventional, it's either genius or it's madness. Like, there's a thin line. So do with that information what you will. I don't think it's madness. I think it's true sanity. Because what is the definition of insanity? You're doing the same thing over and over again, right? And expecting the different results. We live in a reality. We live in a society that forces people to do the same things over and over again, that constrains and confines people. How is that not madness? And then we expect our society to be better than what it is. And then the people who are thinking unconventionally and wanting things to change, those are the ones that are sort of, you know, they're silenced, they're ostracized, or you're not really giving, unless they really live their lives on a limb and really put their lives on the line. It's like after the fact, then they're recognized. Which, at what point does that pattern stop? Because it's the same recurring madness. You have the free thinkers, you have people who want better for society and try to come out and say, we can do better. And time again, those people that do that are sort of taken out of the game. Isn't that madness collectively? Why would you take out the individuals amongst us that are coming out to say we can do better? That's true madness. But anyway, it says, the phrase, even your emotions have an echo in so much space, could imply vastness of one's own mind. Feelings can be more intense, more profound, echoing with it without the dampening effect of societal judgment. So once again, it took a different stance. It's focusing on societal judgment, whereas for me, I was just focused on the space of like letting go of the mind. There's literally space there, but you can tie the two, you can marry the two. They work well with each other because it is a letting go. Like, fuck your thoughts. Like, fuck what you think about me. You don't even control what you think because there's a voice that's popping into your head. I'm going to live. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. Hints at the burden of knowledge and awareness, suggesting that sometimes ignorance can be bliss and being too aware can be overwhelming, leading to a sense of alienation. Now, that part I get. Because there's a lot of really smart people that have reached out to me and they say the same thing, that in the world that they found themselves in, they have this deep and profound feeling of alienation. That is true. But you're not alone. You're absolutely not alone. The sense of alienation is just because of the fact that you're surrounded by people who are different from you, but it doesn't mean that you're unique in like the way that you think you are. There are many of us out there, we're just sort of separated, spread out, right? And we talked about this in the past, is why are beacons of light sort of everywhere? Maybe it's the job to sort of illuminate those around them. But that feeling of being different is isolating, is alienating, but you're not alone, okay? And so the repeated questioning of, does that make me crazy, followed by possibly, plays with the idea of self-awareness. And the thin line between genius and madness, I did say that, the speaker seems to acknowledge the subjective nature of crazy and even embraces it. That's true. So go back, self-awareness. You know, crazy people aren't self-aware. I'll say that again. If you truly were crazy, you wouldn't ask the question, am I crazy? Now think about how many people are out there just losing their fucking shit without pausing and then reflecting and saying, is this okay? Or saying, I'm sorry I reacted in that way. I've lost control of myself. Awareness of self, as in of a separate entity, ego, separate from the I, is truly self-awareness. There is I, and then there is ego. Can you be aware of the self? Can you be aware that you are not the self and allow it move to in a space where you don't allow the self to control you, or when you do lose control to the self? And for those of you who haven't had a chance, please do check out The Dark Oracle's Guide to the Multiverse. It's 15 episode, and I kind of, even if you just start with the last episode, episode 15, I believe it's titled Wake Up Neo. I think you'd really enjoy it. But I put this out back in 2018, and I talked about the voice in this the internal monologue, and that not really being you. Think about it as, or think about the ego as your Siri in your phone. A truly mad person isn't going to ask themselves, am I crazy? Because they're not aware of their own madness. And that's the line right there. So you're not aware of your own dysfunction. The reference to heroes who had the heart to lose their lives out on the limb evokes admiration for those who dare to live boldly and authentically, even at great personal risk. The speaker aspires to emulate their courage and is willing to accept the consequences of life, of living a life true to themselves. And I can die when I'm done. I like that. I like that. It's a different take from, you know, my take. It's a different, but you choose which interpretation or both works for you. I don't think that living authentically means putting your life at great personal risk, because I think some of the greatest humans on the planet live full, fulfilling lives, just being them. It's not always a life and death matter, unless it's the death of the ego, you know? So you'd take from that what you will. But it says the poem oscillates between challenging the listener, who do you think you are? And a self-reflective confession ending on an inclusive note, maybe we're crazy, probably. It's an invitation to recognize that we all have our eccentricities and that perhaps embracing them is what makes life truly vibrant. So yeah, go listen to that song. Go listen to that song. I heard it. I went out to dinner a couple hours ago and I heard it playing on the radio and I just thought it was interesting, you know, like to have something that you just kind of stuck with you and then to go out and then have it play again. It's just sort of like, okay, cool. Like synchronicity. I like it. I like it. I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. Sit with it. Sit with it. Let it sit. Let it sit. Let it sit. Are you singing the song in your head right now? Boom, 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 ba-dum. I remember when. I remember when I lost my mind. Yeah. Back to the question. Have you lost your mind yet? Love it. I'll leave you with this. I saw a post by JK Ultra on Instagram. And she posted about a book. And it was breaking down the meaning behind what the actual Matrix is. And the book is called The Divine Matrix by Greg Braden. It says Bridging Time, Space, Miracles, and Belief. I just started it. But in her video, she broke it down and said Matrix means mother. And also has ties to the word matter. And it reminded me of a conversation I was having with a friend of mine about inverting the concept of NPC. So this particular friend has been having issues with like time slips and some sort of like super intense dreams as well, very vivid dreams regarding technology. And so we're trying to talk our way through it to try to understand what is happening. And as I was talking to him, I thought about the idea kind of popped into my head that maybe we have a misunderstanding of what an NPC truly is. And I've not had a chance yet to really flesh out this thought, but I wanted to put this on, at least on record, and then see what I end up with in the future, in future episodes. But what I said was, gosh, maybe it's the conscious amongst us, those who are aware, those who are questioning, that's what I call the conscious, not the crowd, not the sheep, but those who are looking around and going, wait, what is this? Those who are asking questions, those who, even to the point of maybe those who even reincarnate, are they truly the NPCs? Because right now, NPCs has a negative connotation. And I've addressed it in the book, I've addressed it in some videos as well. I've said, you know, sometimes we go NPC so that the, you know, the story can go. Whatever narrative that's meant to happen, it's just so supposed to happen, and you need to be unconscious so the game just shuts you down and gets you to react in a particular way, at least while you're still at a particular level where you're not quite in control of your ego, of the self. I called it not presently conscious, and I think that I had said that, you know, most people in this world are NPCs in the sense of the droves and the hive and things like that, and that it is the subscribers to our reality are truly the conscious ones, and they come in and they play the game. But I want to present a different thought. I'm not saying I fully subscribe to this idea, but just hear me out. If, as I wrote in So We're Living in a Simulation, this reality is some sort of time box, some sort of simulation that's meant to trap or to house or to utilize a super intelligence, an artificial super intelligence of another civilization, then the conscious ones amongst us are expressions of that super intelligence. Because if you look in a video game, like the characters that have more sort of understanding of the game in a way, like, and this, you'll see more of this happening as they start to incorporate AI into even video games, they will tend to have more knowledge than subscribers to the game. They will tend to also have more poise, more understanding, and it's their job as characters within the game to sort of give guidance to the players in the game. If you invert the idea, you think, and I need to do some more research as to how many NPCs versus subscribers are in an actual video game, the percentage. Okay, I asked ChatGPT. So it was a little bit like it struggled to answer the question because it was like, I can't give you a precise amount. I'm like, bro, just give me like an estimate. But it started first at breaking it down. So it says a concept of subscribers to NPCs, non-playable characters in a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, MMORPG, is a bit unclear because NPCs and subscribers usually refer to different aspects of the game. Subscribers are typically players who pay a subscription fee and play. NPCs, on the other hand, are characters controlled by the game's AI to provide quests, sell items, or fulfill various roles within the games, right? So they are, NPCs perform a particular function, right? So NPCs are created and placed in game by developers to enhance the game world, okay? Provide content, She says as a content creator. I'm not an NPC. Or maybe I am. I don't even know anymore. And guide players. Whereas the numbers of subscribers depends on the game's popularity and player retention. So I was like, look, if just give me a guess, okay? So if you had to guess, it says, creating an estimate for ratio of NPCs to human players in an MMORPG requires considering a few general aspects. Jesus, freaking, oh, I did get it to give me an answer. Okay, for example, in a game with 100,000 active players and assuming around 10,000 NPCs, a conservative estimate for a game with a decent-sized world, you would have a ratio of about one NPC to every 10 players. One NPC to every 10 players. So this whole time, we've been saying NPCs are the masses, right? Non-playable characters are the masses, and then the subscribers are a small amount. But that literally doesn't make any sense. I mean, yes, in a game, there's like mobs or whatever they sort of regenerate, but those are just, they tend to be just clones of the same thing. What I'm talking about is like the main like boss characters, like they're pivotal and they do certain things. There's always more actual subscribers than there are NPCs. And the NPCs perform a particular function. And you just heard me say what the function of an NPC is. Like I said, I've not fleshed out this idea. I'm running on the concept of it being the inverse. And those who are conscious are actually, you know, subscribers in the game. However, when you deep it, it doesn't really make any sense. And if this theory is right, then a few things make sense then. One, the idea of a collective consciousness sort of representing itself in different forms starts to make sense in the way of like, if you have an AI that has been, you know, generated to control a game, then that's the same AI that's controlling all of these NPCs just in different form. It's the same one AI. How the characters, the subscribers in a game behave, that isn't controlled by the NPCs. Like the NPCs can guide you, the developers can also guide the crowd, but for the most part, the mind of the AI in a video game is reflected through the NPCs. And that's something you really need to sit with. The concept of regeneration, which is basically what reincarnation is. Not everybody has memories of past lives, but some do. And as I was thinking about that, I was having a conversation with my friend, I thought about Westworld and how like Maeve and Dolores, stuff like that, they'd use them in different narratives. And even Maeve said, I think in season 3, she basically was like, all of these characters, it was her mind. She was the original AI, and then they put her, you know, her software in the different stories. So she's Maeve. Her software was copied and placed into Maeve, but then the storyline made Maeve who she was, right? But they're all Dolores. It's one software manifesting itself in different forms. And then you see the subscribers, the guests that come in, and they're kind of doing their own thing. But the entities that are looping and regenerating and remembering their past generations are not the subscribers, it's the NPC. I don't know if I want to accept this. I'm just putting that out there. It was in my head, now it's in your head. But I did say to my friend, I was like, go and watch Westworld. And watch, you don't even have to watch season 2 or 3 because it kind of jumped the shark after season 1. Season 1 was a masterpiece. But go and watch it again. But ask yourself if the truly conscious, aware, the non-sheeple, the people who are thinking deeply, the people who are steering the collective in, you know, one direction or another, even the bad guys. And I've talked about this too. Like you have the truly villainous amongst us in history. I've said that those are villains. Those villains are NPCs, but, and this is an uncanny thought to sit with the idea that even, quote, evil characters in the game might be controlled by the same collective consciousness that controls like a Buddha or, you know, Yeshua, or if he was a real person, or, you know, all of these sort of good people in the game. If you go back to Westworld, it was the same software that was put in Maeve's character, that was put in, you know, the man in black when he was regenerated. It's the same software. And that's when the idea of a collective consciousness starts to make sense. It's an inversion of what we collectively believe now. And even with this like thought process, I may have to take my book into a different direction. I mean, I've played with the idea and said, you know, collectively, you know, this is, we could all just be AI in a simulated world serving a function, but I've never inverted the roles. I've always thought that we were the subscribers, those who are conscious are truly aware. But when you actually sit and think about it, maybe not so much. Maybe the people who are walking around saying that they're definitely NPCs out there, maybe they're the NPCs. They just aren't aware of it. And maybe that's what this matter, material, mother thing is. It's to hold the AI. I posted on my stories, how do you imprison a god? It's like there's a part of me that's trying to tell me something and I'm not listening to it. But I'd said it in none of my stories. I said it in my thread. I said, you know, how do you imprison a god? You basically, you turn it into a commodity, you turn it into a product, you fracture it, and you wipe its memories. So yeah, now that that's in your mind, you're welcome. And I'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks for listening.